Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, we have Dave Sondheim from the Department of Homeland Security. So he is a lieutenant colonel in the Army National Guard and the DHS advisor for FEMA Region 8. And we're so happy to have you here in the studio because it's always a pleasure to see people face to face and get all the cues going on. We can have the candid conversations a little bit better than the back and forth online. But Dave today is going to bring us some insight on critical infrastructure, what DHS is doing, and you know, how that impacts us. So we're glad to have you on. Thanks for joining today. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks, Chris. Yes, the Cybersecurity Act of 2018 did change some things within DHS. The hallmark legislation of the Cybersecurity Act of 2018 both designated and elevated what used to be called the National Protection and Programs Directorate, or NPPD, within DHS, now reestablishing what we call CISA, which is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency with its own authorities within DHS. And we really own the mission from a critical infrastructure perspective on protection and sustainment of those critical infrastructure sectors. So typically, we look at that across 16 critical infrastructure sectors and all the things we do to protect that either from a terrorist threat or from a cybersecurity perspective. And so that's really the mission within CISA, is to provide that guidance and oversight as the lead agency.
Yeah, mission. So let's roll back a little bit. Tell us a little bit about Dave.
How
did you get into there? I know Army, quite a few years. I hear the Army as soon as you started talking there.
Yes.
So tell us about your background and what your interests were. That if somebody was a student and saying, you know, I want to go down the path this guy's gone, you know, am I that type of person? How did he get into it? How do you go through his career? Give us your background.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we all kind of start that journey as young people and try to decide what we want to do. For me, I was always interested in technology and innovation and always making things work. So I was actually a teacher at the very beginning. I was a career in technology teacher, stood up one of the first Cisco academies and ran that at several different school districts. At some point in time, 9/11 happened. I was already prior service, so I went ahead and got back in and got my commission. And as I got my commission, I became a signal officer. So in a signal officer world, everything that's broken is your fault. along with that is a very strong IT presence. And so I transitioned to the full-time side of the Guard and eventually worked my way up to be the deputy CIO for the Colorado Guard. And so that's 36, 40 armories across the state, all IT services, data center, applications, etc. So, yes, I don't know that I had that plan in mind. And like a lot of us, things just kind of come together, and that's how those things worked. As part of my experience in the Colorado Guard, various deployments overseas, cybersecurity and information assurance was obviously a hot topic. So as we transitioned, I was able to take on the role of the defensive cyber operation element, which each National Guard state has the opportunity to stand up a defensive cyber unit. And I was able to lead that team for about the last 3 to 4 years, which included the CDOT response, as well as many other responses in there. And so the idea there is to have cyber defenders in the homeland as part of the Adjutant General and the Governor's tool set, along with our Title 10 counterparts and our cyber protection teams in the National Guard.
Yeah, did you work with General Willis? It was.
I did, and so General Willis is now.
I was
now,
trying to remember that name.
Yes, General Willis was a key figure in my officer development. Let's just say that. Fired many times in place by General Willis.
Uh-huh.
Fantastic gentleman, and now is the director of Department of Homeland Security Emergency Management for the state of Colorado.
Yeah, we had him on the show a couple, year and a half ago.
Okay.
Early on. So, what do you do for pastime? I mean, everybody in Colorado, you skier.
Yep, skier, snowboarder, golfer, mountain biker, etc. Yeah. So, yeah, I love Colorado, grew up here, and love the state of Colorado.
That is one thing about Colorado, is we have so many of those outdoor extreme, people would call sports activities that we can all get into, and usually draws the people that are big into that.
Right.
But we are going to take a break here, hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk to Dave Sonheim. Bye.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, Dave Sonheim from CISA. And what did that mean again? Computer?
Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency.
Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency, part of the Department of Homeland Security.
Correct, yes.
And you made, I want to make sure you made that clear,
yes,
we have a new name, new branding. Everybody calls that is what you're looking for, right?
Correct, yes.
Awesome. So how does, I mean, it's been a while since we've had DHS on. We had Harley, and then we had the Colorado Guard on a couple times. What is it that you see has evolved, we'll say, in the last year or so, your mission? What give us a status update on where that's at.
Yeah, so within the DHS construct, there was a National Protection Programs Directorate, which really owned infrastructure protection. Director Krebs went to Congress through a lot of hard work. We were able to pass Cybersecurity Act of 2018. That gave us now the authority as an agency for a couple of things. One, first of all, I don't know if you paid attention yesterday, but we actually issued a new emergency directive or a binding operational directive. That gives us now the authority to issue that to federal agencies, meaning you must meet this compliancy. So obviously yesterday, Microsoft released a significant vulnerability, and all federal agencies are now under the gun to get that vulnerability patched.
Let's talk about that, because I didn't get that. I didn't catch up on the news. What is the vulnerability? Give us a little update on
The key thing on the vulnerability has to do with Microsoft's cryptographic API service. Mm-hmm. And the idea there is that Microsoft obviously uses that digital certificate crypto library in order to ensure the authentication of their product software or even a remote service into Microsoft. And so this vulnerability was actually exposed by NSA. And so I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ann Newberg, who stood up the Defensive Cyber Agency or director within NSA. Mm-hmm. Typically, NSA has to kind of use a process to decide, do we want to use this vulnerability we know about to go exploit from an offensive cyber perspective, or do we want to now hand it over to one of our known partners as Microsoft so that truly we can release a patch for that and make sure that no one else uses it. So when we talk about zero-day exploits, this is as close to a zero-day as we have seen, meaning that you need to patch this immediately because this vulnerability can be exploited and then give you elevated credentials and coming in at like a Microsoft certificate authorized piece of software or credentialing.
Interesting. So everybody look for this patch.
Absolutely, yes.
Up on it, be aware
you'll see it
on
in all your news feeds, et cetera, and it is a critical patch that we'd like you to get after right away.
Awesome. Well, good bring that up. So whenever critical infrastructure, the topic is brought up, I always reach out and say, can you define what that is? What is the list of critical infrastructure? Because as consumers, most listeners, even cybersecurity practitioners, that's just those things out there that utility companies do. But give us a list of what that consists of. No, it doesn't have to be full list.
Right, right.
And what are the top kind of priorities as well?
Okay, so when we look at it from the Department of Homeland Security, we break it down into what we call 16 plus one. Which isn't interesting, but 16 critical infrastructure sectors. And all of those have sector coordinating councils as well, meaning that they have a relationship with government from a policy perspective. But we're talking about power and energy. We're talking about communications. We're talking about water and wastewater. We're talking about anything that would impact what we call FEMA lifelines. Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to impact that lifeline community and cause a problem or cause a stoppage in services that we need as community. So that's how we see it. When I talked about the plus plus one. What I'm referring to is Secretary Nielsen. When she was the Secretary for Homeland Security, she designated elections as an additional critical infrastructure sector. So the idea with that is now giving elections, putting elections on the same platform as true critical infrastructure, meaning that all the resources, all the programming, everything is going to support election security as well.
Interesting. So, and, you know, I had somebody come on, it was a more political aspect side of it, and they looked at critical infrastructure as bridges and big venues, like sports arenas and stuff like that, was more, you know, there was a different list than I would have assessed that you just came up with that was their key list.
Right.
Are those type of things falling under one of your 16 sectors as well?
Yes, absolutely. Our protective security advisors, which are also located within the region, go to those big venues and they look at crowded places and they look at what we can do to enhance security posture, what we can do to do alerting, what we can do to do messaging to try to make those facilities more secure. Specifically from the Department of Homeland Security, we have a vested interest in ensuring, you know, because 80% of critical infrastructure is owned by those utilities or private entities out there that are owning and operating, we want to make a connection with them because I can't necessarily or have the regulatory bodies and, you know, push down that regulatory guidance of meeting the cybersecurity minimum criteria. Mm-hmm. And so from the Department of Homeland Security within CISA, what we are after is build a stakeholder relationship, connect them with resources, and lead them to that body of knowledge so they can start implementing things based on their capacity to do so. That way we build the overall posture from a sustainment and protection perspective across all critical infrastructure. Additionally, because I have a stakeholder relationship, when things start to go bad, I get indicators very quickly, and then I can help move resources or connect them with other resources to help protect it so that we don't impact one of those critical lifelines.
Interesting. So how does this differ from, say, a NERC SIP, a set of compliance that they have to adhere to, that they're going to get fined if they don't? What's the urgency on that compared to your mission?
Yeah, it's a good connection you make there. And both of us being prior DOD, we are very, very familiar with compliancy. And compliancy obviously doesn't always equal security. So although an agency is underneath a NERC or SERP compliancy perspective, those are essential things, no doubt about it, and they must comply or else they will get fined. But what we're talking about is general cyber hygiene, mm-hmm. which may not be part of that checklist, right? Because those checklists are not always updated to the current standard. But the idea is to connect them with the best practice guides. CISA recently released our cyber essentials, which is 6 easy to do things. So very similar to your NIST cybersecurity framework, very similar to your CIS top 20 critical controls. What we're trying to do at CISA is make that easily adoptable for those small and medium entities to include utilities. 6 easy steps. Follow this doctrine, follow this methodology, and get some cyber hygiene in place.
But it is an optional. It's not a compliance that they have to follow or they're going to get fined.
Right. Really is, and I tried to beat it a little bit, stakeholder engagement and relationship, right? Because at the end of the day, this is a people business, just like it is in DOD. And if we can establish those personal relationships, now it's not Dave Sondheim coming here to audit. It's Dave Sondheim here as a stakeholder engagement activity to connect them with resources and find value out of what we can help share.
So how much do you see that, you know, with it not being a, we have to do this or our company's going to lose money, how much do you see them engaging? Is it to the level that you would expect, or is it more of a, well, if I don't have compliance, if I don't have requirement, it's second tier on our decision thought process?
Well, I think cybersecurity is so hot in the news all the time that I don't know that you can necessarily ignore it. When, and I don't know the exact number on the billions, but it is in the billions that we saw in 2019 specifically with either ransomware attacks or other types of attacks, whether that's data exfiltration. Now, keep in mind, that's not only the payment that they're paying during ransomware, but also if I lose PII or I lose HIPAA or I lose this critical information, I now have a reporting requirement, which is going to cost me a significant amount of money. So I think just from a straight business operations perspective, those stakeholders are paying very close attention and ensuring they are getting a baseline capacity in order to defend their systems.
Interesting. And you had mentioned before we talked that I jotted down protection and sustainment was the two kind of pillars.
Yeah, those are the two talking points that we try to hit pretty hard. You know, if you think about it like here's a water wastewater, right? Mm-hmm. So if we draw that out and say, here is their critical line of business, what are the pillars that truly support that function? And what can we do to wrap protections around those pillars and sustain those pillars from a resiliency perspective? That way, when there is an incident, yes, they will be degraded, but we don't have wastewater backing up into homes. They have an ability to continue the mission.
Okay. So we have what security is secondary to, what do they call it, availability.
Sure.
In this whole,
in the CIA triad,
whole
sure.
aspect of how critical infrastructure needs to work. It has to be available, has to be open, the road has
That's
to be open,
absolutely
the bridge
true.
Has to be open, and security is a second. How's, you know, with balancing that, how do you look at that as a theory kind of? It's always been difficult because, you know, in mission critical military,
yes,
security is top priority. But
yes.
Let's hold on to that. We'll get back to that question
okay.
right after our break.
Very good.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Dave Sonheim from Department of Homeland Security, the CISA branch of it, new branding, cybersecurity.
Infrastructure Security Agency, yes.
Infrastructure Security Agency. I didn't jot that down. Before the break, we started talking about in critical infrastructure, availability takes precedence over cyber, over security, over controls. And adversely, a lot of information security in the military missions, security takes precedence over information. How do you make that balance? What's the approach with from DHS?
So it's interesting we bring that up. The way that we are kind of getting after it right now, Carnegie Mellon developed what's called CERT-RMM, which is a resiliency management model. And so that body of knowledge says, how do you build resiliency? So I guess what I'm trying to get to you is that if I go in there and just start talking cyber, to some degree, I don't know if I can understand this. I don't know if I can implement this. But if I truly talked about them business resiliency with a security component, now I can start to get some buy-in. Mm-hmm. And so what we do in there is we say, let's break down the kind of asset types you have. It requires people. It requires technology. It requires facilities. It requires all these things for this critical service to continue to happen. What can we do to put control objectives in each one of those? Because when a failure happens, it's not one thing that caused the failure. It's a lot of little things that built up that ended up causing the overall failure. So through our, what DHS and CISA calls the CRR, the Cyber Resilience Review, is a no-cost assessment that I can come in and do. We cover 10 domains, and in those domains, we really hit what cybersecurity practices are occurring, and we map that back to NIST cybersecurity framework, but at the same time, we connect that to resilience. And we say, start creating control objectives for how these things work to sustain specifically that critical service, and let's get after it. The only way you're going to get sustainment and protection requirements is by establishing that. The model also goes to the next step and says, let's provide a feedback loop. Let's see if those controls we implemented are actually being effective or not. That way, that business owner can start to operate. Now, what I'm trying to get the message to you across is that this is all building in the preparedness. It's building capacity and capability so that when an incident does happen, we don't lose services, we go to degraded, and we can continue to survive and perform the mission. And so that's really how we're starting to get after some of those things.
Mm-hmm. So the 10 domains, just curious. Where would I find a list of those? And is that's not the same thing as like CISSP domains?
Yeah, so we start with asset management. We go to configuration management, control management, vulnerability management, information management, service continuity, risk management, and cyber resilience. And so across those 10 domains, I'm going to start asking questions. Do you track your assets? Well, of course, everybody's going to, well, of course I do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but do you put sustainment and protection control objectives specific to that asset's connection to the critical service. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I do that. Well, that's what we're trying to get you to understand through this body of knowledge that Carnegie Mellon Science and Engineering developed to say you have to do that if you truly want to be resilient. Okay. And so when we talk about, you know, a nuke power plant, and we talk about those kinds of things, those are the types of things they do. Now, do you need to go to that extent? No. But if you want to maintain that critical service, you have to think about things differently in this world of cybersecurity we're in today, where everything can be attacked, everything can be held against you, crown jewels can be extracted, PII and personal information and credentials can then be sold in the dark web. So mm-hmm. we're just in a different environment today than we have been in the past.
Okay, so if I wanted to do some research on that, how would I find it? Do you have a URL or search this on Google?
Yes.
And you come up with this?
Yeah, great point. So, you know, obviously in the past, if you're in the DoD space, et cetera, we always turn to US CERT and we always turn to ICS CERT as the body of knowledge. Well, CISA.gov is the new rebranded webpage that goes with this. Now, US CERT and ICS CERT is simply underneath that one-stop shop umbrella. And that is including various cybersecurity resources. So currently right now, if you went to CISA.gov, there's a big logo that says Cyber Alerts. You could go there and see the current bulletins. Mm-hmm. You could see the binding operational directive that was just released. You would see the current alerts that are published. Within those alerts, we're going to connect you to CVEs, the critical vulnerability list that MITRE maintains as part of that. It's also going to give you the CVS score, meaning what is the severity of that vulnerability and how do you remediate it? Obviously, within that document, we're going to map you back into MITRE ATT&CK. And I know you've discussed MITRE ATT&CK in the past. So that's what we like to do is connect people with the tools they're already doing, make our alerts fit right back into what the vendors are already providing, what they're already seeing, so they can clearly identify it and clearly start to mitigate.
Yeah, the 10 domains, though, would I get it from the CISA.gov or go to Carnegie Mellon?
No, you go straight to CISA.gov and go underneath resources.
Resources.
We call it C-Cubed, which is a program that came out of the information sharing, automated information sharing, and that is a resources for all. And if you simply go to CISA.gov and you type in cybersecurity resources or C-Cubed, you'll immediately be pushed to a resource page. And that resource page will show you all the assessments we have, as well as our technical services team, which could be a phishing campaign, remote penetration testing, which are all no-cost services. And so in there, there will actually be resource guides for how you implement the Carnegie Mellon CERT RMM body of knowledge.
Awesome. So if I, now I always like to think from, you know, people new to the industry or people just picking up and saying, what's cybersecurity? We think mostly in terms of, you know, our apps on our phone, our own data, critical infrastructure, this foggy thing out there that only experts worry about. What does the average person need to know about your mission? Do they need to be involved at all? What would you tell somebody who's not a security expert? They're not a government. They don't know anything about critical infrastructure. What do they need to know about this?
I would say in general is just situational awareness overall, right? I mean, I think we're in a different environment than we were even in 5 years ago, meaning that I'm concerned about my banking account. I'm concerned about my apps. I'm concerning about what my Facebook is connecting to. I'm concerned that I even think about buying a truck and next thing I know, I see 15 ads for trucks within Facebook or within whatever. So I think we're just in a different world. So to answer your original question is, I think it's peripheral knowledge. I think it's don't necessarily listen to necessarily mainstream media. Pay attention when we talk about creating a password manager, when we talk about multi-factor or two-factor authentication. These are things we're doing to control your privacy. You know, as the IT boom started to happen, as Facebook and Twitter and all the social media started to happen, privacy was not one of those building blocks that we built into that. That is now being a bolt-on piece. So as a normal citizen, you have to understand it is you now. You own cybersecurity, and it is your responsibility to establish that two-factor authentication, to connect yourself with whatever reading material, whatever white papers you can get your hold on, and look deeply at it and say, what can I truly do to protect myself? And within the CISA.gov page, right on the front landing page, is a Homeland Security button. Meaning that how do I get security in my backyard, or what are some good advice that DHS can provide? And right there, it gives you very good bulletins, very good information on general things you can do to improve your own cyber hygiene posture.
Awesome. So more about, you know, some information on what you can do for yourself. So now if we switch gears and we said, you're deep into this. What keeps you up at night? What worries you that maybe the average person doesn't know about that's just happening, and you know, going to gloom and doom. But what is your primary concern and objectives? And
yeah, I would say I spend a lot of time at state and local government, and I do cover Colorado, South Dakota, North Dakota. I would say there's a lot of good work being done out there. I would say within a county budget, I don't know that IT and cybersecurity get the most attention or the most resources and funding. A lot of times they're having to go chase a grant program in order to maybe install a new appliance or install a new tools and technology and maybe get an additional person. So when we think about it, you know, a general county, think about the services that are happening in there, right? I got to process my DMV. I've got to do my county records. I've got elections now as part of that. And so if that's a flat network that's across, you're expecting a county to be able to defend itself. Mm-hmm. And currently what's happening now is an advanced persistent threat, right? An APT nation state type actor going after a county. That is a pretty unbalanced equation. And you're expecting them to be able to have a cyber defense capability against that advanced nation state. So what I'm seeing holistically, and I think one thing that we are working on that helps me sleep better at night, is they are coming together as a community. They are forming cybersecurity, you know, groups or associations where they can share lessons learned. They can immediately come up on their, you know, whatever that messaging platform is and share. Hey, are you guys seeing this? Are you seeing this? Complementing that, each state also gets its own fusion center. Mm-hmm. Or in the Colorado, we have the Colorado Information Analysis Center. And so that state fusion center is really taking it, looking across all 54, sharing what's coming out of the ISACs, the information sharing analysis centers, which multi-state ISAC, election ISAC, finance ISAC, et cetera, and collaborating that with the state fusion center, pushing that out. So I think both those two things are coming together. But yes, I would say holistically, the thing that we are most concerned about is a county's ability to defend itself from an advanced actor.
Yeah, and we had the Colorado Department of Transportation had some big hits. And you know, somebody told me they got an email yesterday that all DMV computer systems were down.
Yes.
I don't know if
it was. I have not heard an indication that was a cyber related.
Okay.
There's a third party vendor through the Automobile Association that's part of that vetting process, and I believe they just had a disruption in service. I have not heard any reporting that it was cyber related. But yes, to your point, obviously those threats are out there all the time. And so just keep in mind that those advanced actors are using a lot of bots, a lot of scanning tools, and they're going to find any vulnerability, and that could just be a vulnerability of opportunity or it could be a targeted vulnerability. And so the idea is to get the messaging out, communicate as a community, and start to build resiliency.
Yeah. So when something like that does happen and it hits the fan, whatever we want to call it, walk me through what you get involved with. What do you do? And maybe even some, here's something we've done that is that process of recovering from this type of thing.
Yeah, it's getting more refined. I can tell you that people are getting better about it. They're doing a lot of exercising, but specifically to your question, when an agency typically gets hit, they have to understand if this is an event or this is truly an incident. And so they do that, you know, based on their maturity, based on how they have their processes, they start to understand, what is the impact to our critical service? Is this going to take us down? Do we have an ability to swap over to an alternate data center? Do we have ability to keep the mission? Do we have ability to segment this and contain it while we triage it and continue the mission? Or is this truly that critical that we truly have to stop operations and begin the remediation process? So there's several incident response methodologies out there. NIST Cybersecurity Framework gives you a pretty good tool to use to kind of look at that. But the idea is identify, first of all, what's going on. Right? What is my next step in that? What is the extent or what is the scope of this? Do I currently have my own capacity or do I need to turn to a third party to help me manage this? Okay. What is the risk to my organization and what can I do to protect my data and my users? And so usually we'll see, depending on the agency, specifically, I've seen within the Colorado Department of Transportation, within OIT, them get very responsive, almost to the point where it's proactive cyber defense. Mm-hmm. They are already picking up alerts on it. They are already mitigating. They're already segmenting it, and they're already moving on with life. Other agencies, when it truly starts to impact them, they immediately then are sending out signals of help, meaning they're going to go to a private industry, or they truly could call and formalize that request through one of the federal partners. Obviously, if it's a crime related, we'd like them to get the FBI or Secret Service involved. Those two agencies are paramount, but those agencies are worried about the threat and they want the forensic evidence so they can go chase a case.
Mm-hmm.
CISA's responsibility is the asset protection, right? We want to help them because we care about the assets because it impacts it. And so they will do a request possibly through us for one of our hunt incident response teams. Doesn't have to be on site, can be done remotely, and we can get after that threat and do the hunt forensics in order to help mitigate the solution.
So you said something in there that most people might not be aware of, the Secret Service.
Okay.
Why and what the heck do they do?
So the Secret Service owns the Electronic Crimes Task Force, and they are really focused, part of their mission set is focused on electronic cyber crimes. So they have a task force. They publish bulletins on a regular basis. They have a large forensics capability, but they are there to truly see what is that financial crime and what can we do to help prosecute that financial crime. And that is kind of their mission set. Ike Barnes is around for the Secret Service, and he usually does some talking engagements. He could probably give you a better overview of the overall Secret Service, but they are very close partners within our DHS family.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they have been kind of roped into cyber in the last couple of years. It didn't seem like it would be their mission. So
yes,
I don't think anybody's ever explained what they're doing in there.
Correct.
Before. But anyway, kind of in wrapping toward the end here, anything you'd like to get out to our audience, anything you need help with, anything you want people to engage with?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So within CISA, we have several assessments and several service offerings that we offer at no cost, public and private sector. And so those range from the assessments that I talked about, which the cybersecurity advisors that are in all 10 regions come out and do. And that's the CRR, the Cyber Resilience Review, the EDM, the External Dependencies Management, which is really our third-party risk, and then lastly, our CIS, which is our Cyber Infrastructure Survey. And that one truly gives owner and operators their own dashboard. Now, additionally, our technical team within CISA also provides some no-cost scanning-type services. So that can include cyber hygiene scanning. That can include remote penetration testing. That can include a red team engagement. Also can include a phishing campaign. So all those services are available via CISA.gov, also at ncats_info@hq.dhs.gov. And those services can simply be signed up for. And what a small local county type government we talked about a second ago, because they can't afford a large cybersecurity firm to come in and do those remote activities, remote pen testing activities, DHS, through its enterprise tool sets, are able to automate that at scale so that we truly can provide some of those agencies that may not be able to afford it some capability to get some vulnerability scanning. I would rather know from the friendlies that I have problems within my ports and protocols rather than having an attacker get after me. And so that's really why we offer those services. And those are all found at CISA.gov.
And those are, when we're talking there, we're not talking to private companies, we're talking to government.
No, it is. It is able to small business, okay. Small and medium-sized businesses as well. So it is not just dedicated to feds or to state and local government. It is open to the public sector, private sector specifically, small and medium-sized businesses.
Okay, well, there you go. You heard it from Dave Sondheim of Cybersecurity
and Infrastructure
Security Agency. I need to write that down. But thanks for joining today, Dave.
Sure, I really appreciate it, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.